episode 157 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded on November 9th, 2017. A puff of the ferret faucet. Blah. A puff of the ferret faucet. Farrah faucet.
Farrah faucet.
A puff of the Farrah faucet spray.
Nailed it.
Did it!
I'm just going to leave all the wrong words.
So Farrah Fawcett is a hard name to say.
Oh, yeah. Farrah Fawcett.
Nobody, you guys both know who Farrah Fawcett is, right? I mean, you're young. You're
We've
not that
seen
young.
Charlie's
yeah.
Angels
okay,
with
good.
Celine Dion.
Good. I was about to feel really old.
Celine Dion? Wait, what's her name? Cameron Diaz. I'm not good with any names today.
So we couldn't remember whether it was two or four puffs. And so
I think it's
a puff.
Damp hair, four puffs of the Farrah Fawcett spray.
That's the Steve recipe.
Yeah, that's how you get the Steve hair.
Yeah.
We had puffs on the mind because we were talking about weed stories. Maybe we'll include that on a Patreon or something.
Perhaps. Well, we were talking about Thor Ragnarok, and that's a movie you'd like to see on weed.
Oh, man. It's amazing even off. Woohoo. We do have to talk about that. But hey, folks, let's get into this episode because we got a lot to talk about. We're talking about Stranger Things 2, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. I'm super excited about it. Spoiler alert, I thought it was amazing. Alias Grace as well over on Netflix, which is a 6-part miniseries. And a new show called Smilf over on Showtime. Is this the new Cougar Town?
It's, single mom ice latte free. Or
ice
something like that, right?
Or something.
Yeah, yeah, something like that.
Yeah,
it's like Girls if they had real problems.
Yeah. But before we get into all that, we are the TV Dudes. I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
And I'm Kyle.
And we want to tell you guys, hey, if you want to help support us, go over to the iTunes store, give us a 5-star rating, write a little review. That helps us out on the show. Another way you can help us is go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. Like we mentioned earlier, we're going to be talking about Thor 2 this week on our little bonus exclusives. Anyway, Thor. Patreon, you can give us like $1 or $2 an episode, and in exchange, you get to listen to those little mini podcasts that we do behind the scenes.
Yeah, and this one's going to be fun instead of heartbreaking like the last few.
Yeah. We'll try and be a little bit more upbeat for the new folks that join on to Patreon, and we appreciate all the support you guys have given us thus far. Okay, so this month, we're supposed to be pimping on Permanent Record.
Permanent Record.
Permanent Record's our network, by the way. We're a proud member of the Permanent Record Podcast Network. It deals mainly in TV. And I was going to say, this month we're supposed to be promoting the network itself, but as of November 13th, this Monday, I'm excited to announce that Les's new show, The Good Die Young, his new podcast, is finally here.
Yes.
If you guys want to go check it out, thegooddieyoungtv.com, no spaces there. And what is this podcast? Randy, why don't you tell us?
So as I understand it, he's going to go through a bunch of brilliant but canceled series. And Les knows, I mean, I thought I knew a bunch, but Les knows a ton of shows that are one season wonders or just never got quite the love they deserved. And he's going to go one by one. He's going to knock them out. His first show is going to be The Middleman from ABC Family, which he proceeded to addict me to, at least. I don't know about other people, but definitely some other people that I didn't even really – I knew the show existed, but I only watched a couple episodes. And now I love it and miss it, and so he gave me a heartbreak.
You know what else is great about the show? So I'm already 2 episodes into Les's podcast because, you know, I'm on that shit.
You got connections.
I got connections. Yeah. Anyways, I've never seen an episode of The Middleman. But these descriptions of the show are so vivid. Like, I feel like I watch the episode every time I listen to him talk about the episode. It's kind of an interesting way to do it.
So, were you on an episode of Middleman? You weren't on an episode if you haven't watched it.
Oh, no. I haven't
watched it. Grant, did you do an episode?
I did the first one because I've only seen the first episode of The Middleman.
I did a later one. I think it was originally going to be the finale, but I think I did a different one. So, so we're both on one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, Les has been putting a lot of work into this. As a guy who worked on Beach Cop Detectives, and I thought I put a lot of work in. No, man, let's put more work in this than I did on Beach Cop Detectives. Because
I remember you doing anything.
I know. I dragged poor Grant in to do the actual work. But he's got interviews coming up. Like, this is going to be, if you liked Beach Cops at all, and I hope you did, this is going to be like that but better. And if you didn't listen to Beach Cops, Beach Cops is also around and on the Permanent Record Network. You can go listen to that.
Yeah, beachcopdetectives.com. But we are talking about the gooddieyoungtv.com. Go to that website. You can also go to the iTunes and subscribe right away because the new episode will be here on November 13th. And while you're there, give them a 5-star rating, write a little review, show the love, tell all your friends about this. If you love The Middleman, you're going to love this experience. If you haven't watched it, go watch it right away.
Yeah, and you're going to give them the reviews because early on in a podcast, it really helps to get the word out and get people noticing. So those extra reviews, while we would love your 5-star reviews, for right now, if you only have time to write one, go write it for Good Die Young because they need that early boost. But let's be honest, if you're already on iTunes, you're doing a 5-star review, it's like one more minute to do five. You're too busy to do one more 5-star review.
Yeah. And if you've updated your iPhone, just say, Siri, leave a 5-star review on the Good Die Young podcast.
Is that true?
I'm pretty sure you can. You can do a subscribe that way.
Oh.
And while you're subscribing, go ahead and 5-star it.
Yeah. It's a good plan. Also, good way to test out your Siri.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys, let's move over to listener questions. If you guys like us on Facebook, once a week, Randy puts up a post that you guys can ask whatever you want to us. Generally, it's TV related, and that's thematically appropriate.
Or sometimes people proposition Grant.
Sometimes that happens. Oh, no. Is there another one?
No, I just wanted to mention that, you know.
Is my stalker back?
No, he's currently driving across country to get here.
All right, first question comes to us from Jonathan Haptemichael, who says, Hi, dudes. Shameless's 8th season started this past Sunday with a very noticeable change. Liam Gallagher, the black youngest child of William H. Macy's Frank, was recast. While the new child actor has shown more facial acting in one episode than his predecessor in 7 seasons, the casting change is almost as obvious a difference as Don Cheadle replacing Terrence Howard in Iron Man 2. What obvious TV character recast do you think worked for the better or for better or worse?
I actually didn't watch this show, but I think the recasting on Roseanne of his daughter from
– It was so blatantly terrible.
It was so blatant. But like they're both good actresses, right? It was Shara Chalk from Scrubs, wasn't it?
It was.
And the previous actor was also good. So that was a good like level trade. Mm-hmm. Like they were both good. But I'm trying to think of like recastings that I noticed.
House of Cards next season's pretty notable. Christopher Plummer, great. How much can that guy do?
Oh wait, no, he's not coming to House of Cards.
No, but that'd be amazing. If they just like give Christopher Plummer all of Kevin Spacey's roles.
He doesn't even look like him.
Nope. But you know what's gonna happen? We'll find out that Christopher Plummer did something in a week or two. It's just the way the world works.
So recast on a Trophy Wife. They recast the daughter. Yeah, from the pilot. Which, when I saw it, I was like, oh, I hate when shows do this. But then that daughter turned out to be amazing.
Yeah.
And then a show, they didn't really recast the characters, but they kind of found themselves in a spot where they had to replace all the characters, and that was Misfits. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Where it just kind of, you know, they kept wanting to make the show, but you could tell all the actors were, like, ready to do something else.
Yeah.
So then somewhere in, like, season 3 or 4, it's just like, oh, we have all new Misfits now.
I feel like when Robert Sheehan left in that first season, that was a bit like, oh, what's the point?
He was really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alec Miracle asks, I'm still waiting for The Leftovers to come out on complete Blu-ray collection. What is your most prized Blu-ray collection, guys? My Lost Complete Collection? Which is a pyramid box looking thing with all the goodies inside, costs a heaping ton, but it was worth every dollar.
For our listeners who are confused, that was Alec Miracle, not Grant talking about his favorite Lost collection.
That's true. Because Alec loves that, yeah.
Because Grant does love Lost.
Oh, I do.
Do you have a complete Lost Blu-ray collection?
I do, but I don't have like the fancy thing for it.
So I almost bought the Breaking Bad collection, the one that had all the barrels and stuff. But I didn't because I had most of the series and at that point I didn't buy. So I've never bought these deluxe box sets because I've always bought them as they go along. And now I don't buy them at all. Now I just buy them on like Amazon or iTunes.
I got one as a gift.
Did you?
The 6 Feet Under one, which is really rad because it's this – it's a rectangle. You know, it's holding all 6 seasons in it. But it looks like a chunk of dirt with the very top is grass. So it fits with the 6 Feet Under thing.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's pretty well done.
I don't know that I actually have any fancy, as I think about it, I don't think I have any fancy TV editions. Like I say, I bought them all by season. I never bought a big, like, the complete set. I never had the patience.
I have like the Batman Begins and Iron Man where it's like it looks like their head. Like Walmart or Target was putting out.
Yeah.
I remember those.
What about you, Kyle? You got any good?
I have a dream box set that I would kill for HBO to put out.
Yeah.
Arliss. Did you guys ever watch Arliss?
Yes.
Okay, so all we have is a two-disc best of the series collection right now. I do own it. But oh my gosh, all like seven seasons of Arliss. Yeah, that would be the best.
I didn't even know there were seven seasons of that show.
What would the packaging on the Arliss season, what would the packaging be for the ultimate
gold dollar? So in the current packaging, they're all like sports balls and stuff. Uh-huh. But I think it would be funny if it was like jock straps and like highball glasses. I don't know, like baseball bats with like burn marks on them and things. Mm-hmm. And any of the debauchery from that show. I loved Arliss.
What about Dream On? You want a Dream On complete set too?
You know what? They actually do have a Dream On complete set. No lie. And I know this because I rented it from this indie video store back in Memphis. Uh-huh. I lost one of the discs and I had to buy the complete Dream On set so I could just give them one disc. So I don't think I still have it.
So you own the incomplete Dream On.
Yeah. The incomplete Dream On.
That's pretty hilarious.
Dream On was good too, though. Doesn't hold up like Arliss.
Michael Gassini says, "Hey dudes, so after Spaceygate, which I didn't know is called that, but that works, House of Cards seems like it will undergo quite a drastic change for its final season. What are some of your favorite or least favorite examples of shows that have been affected by real world events?"
News Radio. Phil Hartman's wife killed herself and him. And they had to bring in somebody else to replace. And Phil Hartman was the heart of that show in a lot of ways. I mean, Dave Foley was great and the ensemble was great, but Phil Hartman was such a big part. And they brought in John Lovitz to replace him. And John Lovitz is fine, but the show really just died.
I feel like all those ABC or CBS shows like had those kind of problems.
Yeah.
Like there was Spin City with Michael J. Fox having to leave.
Yeah.
And there was John Ritter dying and they had to
Eight Rules for Dating My Teenage Daughters. Yeah.
Yeah. Ashton Kutcher came in to replace Charlie Sheen.
Yeah, you're right.
Two and a Half Men.
CBS. That's CBS.
But still, like all these shows, it just seems like there's a lot of those like long running shows that had to replace people because of real world.
Yeah,
stuff.
The Phil Hartman one is one that jumps out at me the most.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm sure there are others, but that's the one I can think of.
Nikki and Paolo got killed off. No, that wasn't because of real world stuff. You know what? I can tell one about Lost.
Yeah.
Real world stuff was Anna Lucia and Libby.
Yeah.
Those two kept getting drunk driving tickets in Hawaii.
Yeah.
And they got kicked off the show because like they couldn't handle their shit.
And that was too bad.
So they both got killed.
And that was too bad because those were stories that would have been interesting if they hadn't been so stupid.
But they did call the episode Two for the Road, which was how much they were drinking. And both of them got killed off in the same episode. Two for the Road.
Wow.
Yep.
That was a good one.
Yeah.
Did you think of any cards?
Jane Lynch and Party Down, which then we got.
Yeah. Oh, wait, what was the thing?
She got Glee, right?
Glee, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think she left for Glee. Yeah. Although I loved what's her name? Meg Mullally.
Meg Mullally was still great. Yeah, the show was still good
she
without
was
her.
Great.
Yeah,
that's the only one I can think of.
Jonathan Huffnagel.
Hey,
he's got a big old question for us this
All
week,
right.
as huge.
Actually. This is pretty restrained for Jonathan Huffman.
It is.
Only two paragraphs.
It is. I should slow my roll here. He's getting at least an epic next time. Stranger Things Season 2 has sparked an interesting topic for me. Waking dreams. You wake up in the middle of the night thirsty and needing to use the washroom. When you walk back to your bed, you realize there's someone sleeping in it. It's you.
What?
Mm-hmm. Waking up in a state of confusion, you soon feel the need to go to the washroom. Suddenly, you're afraid to leave the safety and comfort of your own bed, for if you do, you might return to the bed and find the dream has come true.
Huh?
Have you ever had a dream that you had no other purpose than to mess with you? I often dream my childhood pet is walking around as I sleep or is curled up on my bed. Just old memories inspiring my dreams. When I wake, I am left with bittersweet feelings as she is gone. But I can't help but feel her spirit was visiting me. Have you ever had similar dream feelings?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, I've had dreams about people who died. I have dreams of people who I broke up with or who broke up with me, who I haven't seen, friends who died, like all the time. And when you're in a dream, it feels real and you wake up and just like all of a sudden it's just gone.
I have dreams that I'm having like childlike tantrums. Like we all know people who are adults and they act like children. I have dreams where I do that. Like we'll be doing a podcast and you guys will say something and I'll just get upset and I'll start whining like a baby and, and then I wake up and I'm so embarrassed because of how childish I acted in the dream.
Kyle, I have bad news for you. That was last week's podcast.
No!
Do you remember the episode we called Kyle's Tantrum episode?
No!
It's okay. It's okay. Give him the rattle, Randy. Rattle.
Actually, quick side note, there's that app that lets you rate dates that you've been on. It's like a secret boyfriend rating app. Anyway, somebody gave me a hashtag temper tantrums on that app.
Wow. Okay. I didn't know that app existed, and now I'm horrified.
Yeah. I also had Dude Could Cook, so it evens out.
All right. I have one. The other dream thing, though, this is – I feel like school is particularly scarring because I still to this day – I have not set foot in college in like, I don't know, 15, 20 years. And I still have dreams of not being prepared for a test or not having done the homework or not being able to find my class, not being able to get my classes. That stuff is scarring.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I once had a dream my dog was a sugar donut and she walked into the room. And I ate one of her legs, and she was mad.
Yeah, was that? And then when you woke up, your dog had one less leg?
Yes. But I was very full and content. Benjamin Hamill says, so where do you think Stranger Things should go for season 3? He's talking about, we're going to get to that, buddy. We're going to get to that when we talk about that.
We will try to remember when we get to these Stranger Things. Sure.
I got some great ones for season 3, though.
Dennis McElwain, closing us out here, says, hey, people of TV Dude Land. Have you ever been obligated to watch a show out of nostalgia? I am still watching Chronicles of Shannara. Bad show. Bad show.
Kyle.
Are you thinking what I think you're thinking?
No, I just know you probably have one.
I thought you were going to call me out for Lethal Weapon.
I figured that's going.
No, but you just confessed the love of Arliss, so I know you got to have some nostalgic favorites.
Oh, would that technically be a nostalgia one? I'd do that. Also,
Randy's not hiding his disdain for Arliss very well.
You really don't like Arliss?
No, Arliss was a terrible show.
Oh my gosh, it was like Entourage before we had Entourage.
Yes, that's what I said.
Randy also does not like Entourage.
You don't like Entourage? Although I owned 2 seasons of it on DVD.
Next thing you're going to tell me you don't like Sex and the City.
No, I can't tell you that.
No.
I do like Sex and the City. I don't know if I still do, but I did watch all of it.
Nostalgia watches. HBO Tales from the Crypt. Love those.
Yeah.
Although they're super hard to find too.
Do they? I wonder if they hold up. Because I watched Creepshow 2 the other week and it did not hold up.
I can't watch anything. Like, maybe I'd watch the X-Men cartoons again.
Oh,
when I was a kid.
I wouldn't recommend it.
But those are not good.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it.
I watched one of those in an altered state once and I was like, what is going on? Why is it so bad?
Although Batman the Animated Series,
yeah.
I feel like
you can unironically
watch that and still get that nostalgia. Yeah,
that is great. Even the lesser episodes have stuff to recommend.
It is... All right, guys, let's take a break and go watch some of that.
Yeah. All right, folks, we've got some news. This is pretty notable. We know there's a Disney streaming thing coming. Star Wars and Marvel shows are supposed to be coming to the Disney streaming in 2019, which is a 2019 launch. So
what?
Live action Star Wars, live action Marvel shows.
What?
Audible spit take.
So
I'm very excited about that.
Ewoks are back.
We have no idea what this could be. I mean, it's early announcement, but I mean, hopefully better than the Inhumans.
Hopefully better than Netflix's takes on things as well.
But I feel like if it's theirs, if they have that control over it, maybe Kevin Feige instead of Jeff Loeb will be the guy in charge.
Yeah, it seems like Kevin Feige is or Feige, I don't know.
I don't know. Feige, I think.
He just seems embarrassed by what he's doing and
has
distanced himself and like, eh.
Yeah.
You guys go do your thing, but you can't touch my characters and don't talk to me.
Yeah.
there's no open phone call to my office if you want anything.
So they did note that like the new Warriors that got cast and everything is not going to be on Freeform anymore, but it's probably not going to be on Disney streaming service because they probably wanted to do a debut before 2019. And John Ridley has an in-development Marvel project that I'd forgotten about, which could move to the streaming service because it's not ABC. But I would bet that this is something else. Mm. Like, you know they're going to do something big. Like, they want to launch with a splash. So some big new Star Wars project, some big new Marvel project.
What if there's rumblings that Disney might acquire 20th Century Fox?
Yes.
If they do that.
They do a Fantastic Four show or
Fantastic
X-Men show.
Fantastic Four or X-Men show.
There already is an X-Men show.
But it's not that good.
It's pretty good.
The Gifted is not that good.
Wait, I thought we were talking about Legion.
Legion's great.
That's the X-Men show.
But Gifted is pretty good.
How much have you watched?
Like 4 episodes? What, does it get terrible?
Is it really that good?
Yeah, it's good.
I just thought it was kind of like mediocre.
I'm not on the same with Grant. I haven't been super on board with it. Yeah,
fair enough. But anyway, Fantastic Four, though, they could do an awesome Fantastic Four show.
Yeah.
But also, I don't know if that's going to happen. We'll see. That's all still sort of speculative. But that's fantastic. And Star Wars live action, like there's, you know, we just heard the news that Rian Johnson is going to direct a trilogy of new Star Wars movies.
Wow.
What?
Yeah. And new characters set in a different, I mean, a whole like new Star Wars story.
Is his movie that good?
Apparently they liked working with him that much.
No lie.
Shit.
I've heard rumblings that like, which granted Star Wars is going to make a bajillion dollars, but let's say for some reason Last Jedi bombs.
Uh-huh.
Like it's going to hurt Disney big time.
It's not going to happen.
I know. There's no way in heck. But there was
a
story.
Have you heard rumblings it's not good?
Well, no. There's stories that like think like this hasn't been the best year for Disney. And so now everybody keeps saying like the phrase around the office is just wait till Star Wars. If we can just get to Star Wars, then everything's going to be good. So we just need to get to Star Wars.
Okay. So it's like they're like a retail place that's like waiting for this Christmas to get into the
For the Christmas sale. Yeah. Which
you know what?
Star
a lot
Wars.
Of places work on that type of thing.
Yeah.
So. All right. Jodie Whittaker is the first female Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
They revealed her new costume. It's weird.
I thought it looked pretty rad. It's like it's super chic.
I'm digging it.
I don't know. I like that. It's sort of – I like the sort of casual weird vibe. I mean, Doctor Who's always got to look sort of quirky, and it definitely looks quirky. But I don't know. Something about it didn't do it for me. It's not quite what I wanted. And I saw a friend of mine put in words that I made sense. It's like for cosplayers, it's really like it only works for thin, tall women. And that's kind of uncool because Doctor Who is mostly for nerdy people. Like – All the guy Doctor Who's were cosplayable by guys in glasses and you know,
you
dorks.
You don't
think
big people could wear that outfit?
I don't know. This is what my friend said, and I could sort of see what she was saying.
I would like to point out that all of geek fandom wears spandex, no matter body size.
That's
so
true.
That's ridiculous.
That's true.
A ridiculous complaint.
Fair.
You know when the busty cosplayers get a hold of this, hoo-hoo, those suspenders are going to pop.
But here's the thing, like... The rainbow shirt is a weird, like, is it a deliberate callback to Wesley's rainbow shirt from Star Trek? Because it looks just like it.
Okay, I love that little rainbow stripe going, but it's not like a faded rainbow thing.
Yeah.
And look at the little lines of the jacket. It also mimics it right in there. Like, the whole thing, it just looks really stylish to me.
It's not terrible. I like it, but I don't know. It just didn't immediately, like, I didn't love what... Peter
Capaldi.
I don't love Capaldi's thing either. It just felt
like a magician.
Yeah, I didn't love his either. I liked Matt Smith. I liked the bow tie. I liked the raggedy man look. And I liked David Tennant with his pinstripes and his shoes.
You know what? Here's what I'll give him about Capaldi's outfit. Because when I first saw that, I was like, I'm not like I could tell that they were trying to do something of a throwback, but. When they realized the outfit wasn't working, and then in season two, he started wearing the sweatshirt more often, mm-hmm. and I feel like that's a smart move. Like, if this works, we'll find out pretty quick. If
that's
not,
true.
Let's, you know.
I think my thing with this is it feels like a throwback to the older Doctor Who's, the guys who wore the scarves and the weirder-looking stuff. And I am a guy who came in on 10 and 11, and I like I like the more natty dressed kind of version of Doctor Who. And this one goes back to the more sort of weird casual version. I didn't like it as much. I don't hate it by any means, but I didn't think, oh, that's super awesome.
Yeah.
I'm still going to watch it.
Okay, so the next story is well, we already talked about it a little bit.
Yeah, we've made reference to it.
Netflix.
But yeah. So, yeah, you guys might have heard Kevin Spacey's had a little trouble.
Yeah. My boy, Anthony Rapp.
Yep.
Lay down a rap sheet on him.
Anthony Rapp's intern?
Yeah. that guy's been tweeting about our Star Trek.
That guy's awesome. He's also one of my favorite characters on that show.
He's really good.
Anyway.
He's super nice.
There was a stuff that came out about him that Spacey basically sexually assaulted him when Spacey was 26 and Rapp was 14. Mm-hmm. And then we're hearing lots more about this kind of stuff, including crew members on House of Cards. So basically Netflix cut him out. They announced that season 6 would be the final season, revealing that spinoffs are in the works without him. Then production was halted, and they're going to change it so that Spacey isn't in it. And he has an upcoming film, Gore, which was, I guess, an Al Gore biopic, maybe?
No, Gore Vidal.
Oh, it's Gore Vidal. Okay. I thought Al Gore was weird. That makes more sense. I was like, who's making a biopic about Al Gore?
Christopher Plummer is playing him.
Yeah.
The role now.
Yeah, which is crazy.
Yeah, especially since I think that movie's still going to come out on like December 11th.
Yeah.
And this, we've just heard about this week. So it's like, how long have they been doing reshoots? Like, how much time do they really have to get this thing going?
So Kevin Spacey or his Frank Underwood can die in that show. And I think
that
show
can die.
That show can die. It's already gone past its prime in interest. But that character could easily die, and Claire Underwood takes over because Robin Wright is fantastic in the show.
Disagree with you emphatically.
You don't like her?
She's like my least favorite actress today.
Oh man, I like her so much, and sometimes I'm frustrated with what they give her, but I think she's really good.
Oh, see, I think you may have something there. Mm. But yeah, when she was getting all chummy with Vladimir Putin on there, I was like, bullshit. Mm. Yeah. I'm out.
I like Robin Wright. I haven't watched House of Cards since season one or maybe two. So,
well, now's the time to go back, Randy.
Yep, that's never going to happen.
We can give that a big old fuck that.
Spacey binge. Let's do it.
Is that a foot? is that a foot?
That's how I felt during that scene.
Yeah. When I saw her cover the kid, I'm like, wait, what? And then they're on the bed. I'm like, what are you doing?
Guys, you don't know, but this is actually my childhood story. I'm the child of a single mom. My mom was a model, and I'm sure there's many a times where she threw a blanket over me in a similar situation.
So the show we're talking about over on Showtime is called Smilf.
Yeah.
That stands for Single Mom I'd Like to Finagle.
Uh-huh. Finagle. Yeah, that's good.
We say fuck on this show. Did you guys try to edit for?
Did you guys both turn it on and go, is that what I think it means?
Yeah. Like, I knew going in. I knew going in that's what it stood for. Yeah.
But so, I did like the titular line in the show, though. I was like, you needed to have that in the first episode.
Wait. Oh, you mean that the guy called her that?
Yeah. Where you say it.
The interesting thing about this, this is Frankie Shaw writing, directing, starring, mm-hmm. and she is Shay from Mr. Robot Season 1.
Oh, yeah.
And I was just trying to think of where do I know her from? Where did she get this clout? But this is like her like boutique project, and she's basically a mom. She's a single mom. She's not doing well. She's super poor. Her baby daddy is like in her life, but kind of distant. Her mom
doesn't want to be with her.
Her mom's a mess. And
Rosie O'Donnell.
Oh man, Rosie O'Donnell was great in this too. By the way,
yeah, like something I wouldn't expect to say, but yeah,
yeah,
you're
no,
right.
And it's this basically this first episode. It's a half hour. The weird thing about it, like I wound up liking this more than I expected. Like, I think I might go back and watch more of this. Were you guys on that place?
Yeah, I kind of.
Oh, I got to at least see the next episode.
Yeah. I was also super annoyed, though. It was like the whole naming of the show is that Cougar Town thing. Once again, I'm like, why do they give these bad, like, talk to the hand or kind of names like that? I'm like, I don't need Smilf, some cornball slang.
I agree. This is a terrible name for a show.
I don't know. So think of it this way. We see her nude in this episode one time.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And it's very awkward. She's giving her child a bath.
Yeah.
All right. She's very sexy. Like, she's a very sexy actress. All right.
Yeah.
But there's nothing sexy about the situations that she's in, even though a lot of them revolve around sex.
Yeah.
It's this really weird, like, just because you're a mom doesn't mean you're not also, like, wanting to fuck.
Especially when you're that young. I mean, she's a young mom. Her kid's, like, what, 3 or 4? I mean,
Two.
Old enough to be talking and everything.
Barely, he's just babbling a little.
But not even just babbling. Like, he was saying, like, hook, ladder. I mean, there's some words in there.
Right. 2.5, 3.
Anyway, I felt it was older than I would have thought. So she's had this kid for a little while. But I thought the weirdest thing for the show was the tone. I couldn't quite put my finger on it. It was like, at some points it was supposed to be funny. At some point it's like tragic. And I couldn't quite figure out what tone they wanted to be going for.
I thought I don't know. It felt fairly even in that regard to me. Like, I got that it's a quirky, offbeat, dark comedy, I guess, in a way. That wants to be a little bit unapologetic in how it addresses some like sad like sexual issues with a certain class, and I'm like, that's rough.
What did you guys think about the sort of not hallucinations, but the sort of like the imaginations that she has, like when she's imagining the dude coming back to her place?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like she's running through scenarios in her head, and we sort of see them. Did you think that worked?
I wouldn't be surprised if they don't do more of that.
Okay.
I feel like the other stuff was working so well that you didn't really need like a dream sequence.
I agree. I think that's true.
But I do, I love like at the beginning with the basketball player.
Yeah.
Where, that wasn't a dream and it wasn't a surreal like scene, but it felt very surreal.
Yeah.
Like where just the second she mentioned she was a mom,
it
kind of like flipped on a dime and her whole world changed.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was impressed with the very last scene where she's doing a line reading.
Yeah.
She's supposed to be acting. And her acting was really good in that scene, both for us to watch and for, you know, for the role that she was going for.
Yeah.
And then how it all ends.
Oh, the awkwardness in that room is so good.
It was so darkly hilarious.
Yeah, yeah.
How she just says that, and everyone's like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
And that guy's like, yeah, my sister, too. And it's like,
And they're all like laughing about it. It's messed up. Yeah.
Do you recognize our boy from Atypical, the boyfriend?
Oh, is that who that was?
Yeah, he was playing the young director in that casting room.
Okay, all right.
Mm-hmm.
I also thought her, the bit where she like, puts the kid, she's like, she just needs some food. She doesn't have any food in the place. So she like puts a bunch of pillows so the kid won't move, runs down the street to go get some food. And then of course, like the guy's slow at the counter. She runs into an old friend. Like, I haven't been in exactly that situation, but I've definitely, as when I was a younger dad, ran into the situation where I'm like, the kid's asleep. Like, the kid's not going anywhere for 8 hours, but I cannot go anywhere for 5 minutes. That's not allowed. That's not okay. And I was never in that position where I had to. But you know, Grant, you know exactly what I'm talking about. They're like they're settled in, they're good. But if I leave the house right now, I'm a monster.
I've ran that scenario in my head several times. About, like, what can I get away with here? Yeah.
And in your head, you're always coming back to a house that's on fire, right? Always, always. Like, you come back and the house is on fire.
That's the extreme panic of I left my kids there.
Yeah, I mean, they did such a great job of her showing. She's like gathering all this food as fast as she can, and you can see they're not saying it, but you can see that panic that she knows she needs to be back and she wants to get back and have this all be okay.
They also alluded to the whole like Eric Clapton's kid kind of thing with like the dad being like, you haven't fixed that messed up window, you can fall out the window kind of thing. So I was like, that in the back of my mind, like, as she's running, I'm like, this show's not gonna go that dark.
Oh my god, I hadn't even thought about that.
Turn on like because I was like, I don't know. I don't really know with the pilot episode. Where
oh,
it wants
man,
to go.
I hadn't even considered that.
I was just glad it didn't.
Oh, my God, I couldn't have watched that.
Yeah.
I don't think they would have called it Smilf. And she was only going to be a smell for the first episode.
That's the sound it made.
Damn, Randy.
What, you went dark?
This got real dark.
Super dark there. All right, guys. So what do we think? We're going to go back to this?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm going to watch another episode. It's a half-hour show. There's 10 episodes. I can do that.
Yeah.
I really
Connie
like
Britton. Whenever Connie Britton. We didn't even mention her.
Yeah. That's a good point. But no, I like going back to Showtime. I don't feel like they keep enough consistent good stuff on there to keep tuning in. Not like HBO.
Okay, so over on Netflix, Alias Grace is another new miniseries that just came out on Friday.
Mm-hmm. And the award for most boring title card sequence.
Gosh. Terrible.
This was definitely a skip intro type show.
I mean, this was not made by Netflix initially. This was made by PBS Canada.
Oh, okay.
And so if you think of that kind of intro in a PBS Canada show, I'm like, yeah, I get it. This is a period piece about an Irish-Canadian immigrant named Grace Marks. She came over to Ireland in the 1850s, I'm guessing.
So pre-Civil War. Funny story about this. I was trying to describe this to my friend at work today. And he's like, so when is it, like 17th century, 18th century? And I said, I don't know, man. There's no cars, there's no spaceship, there's no cavemen. That's how I know where it is. And I've realized I do not know the difference between the 16th century and the 18th century. And he's like, were there any Indians? And I'm like, they mentioned them. And I'm like, he's like, were they wearing tri-corner hats? I'm like, they're wearing like Goody Proctor stuff. And I can sort of nail it down there. But I don't know where it's 15th to 19th century. That's all the same to me.
Oh, well, we know where the Civil War hits near the end of the season. Oh, we're going to hit spoilers here, folks.
Oh, so yeah, spoilers.
Randy only saw half of this, but Kyle and I saw the rest. Anyway, so the basic premise is that this girl was an immigrant, and she's now locked in prison being examined by a psychiatrist, basically, although it was called an alienist back in the day when they were first trying to study the psychology of people and like how they might have hysterics or whatever.
Dr. Yep. Simon Jordan.
Dr. Simon Jordan.
Played by the bad guy from Kingsman.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Xe's little.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Opposite. So
she's been accused of murder and imprisoned for life. She was also committed to an asylum for a bit. And they're trying to determine whether or not she was actually a murderer, if she's crazy, if she might potentially even have split personality disorder or dissociative identity disorder.
Yeah.
Is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
stuff that we haven't even invented yet.
Yeah, so they're kind of going into her past. She's telling her story to this guy, and we see how everything unravels and how things play out with her past as a servant and growing up in a series of abusive relationships around men and losing anyone who does care and love for her. Early on, they all die around her.
Lemony Snicket's would be like, damn.
So, Kyle, you saw this. What'd you think?
It starts kind of weird. I'm not going to lie. It's like, it takes a moment. You're like, oh, is this like Downton Abbey? You know, is this
way too like Downton Abbey?
Psychological. Because, yeah, it's very much a period piece, and these don't always work, especially the source material. Isn't it like Jane Austen or?
No, it's Margaret Atwood.
Margaret Atwood.
Yeah. Who just did Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
Oh. On Hulu.
And so, yeah, instead of being a sci-fi piece, this is a period piece, but it does have some of the same themes as a lot of Margaret Atwood's work.
Well, you know what's interesting?
Men are terrible.
Men are terrible, which turns out still a theme.
I thought a lot about Chance over on Hulu, season one.
I can see
when
that,
I was
actually
watching this.
Go ahead.
And I feel like this show accomplished better what I was wanting to get out of Chance, where like it plays with the unreliable narrator much more in the show. And I think that, for me, is like the major strength of this, is you're watching the story for a little bit and you're like, okay, why do I care? And then they'll cut and they'll show you the same scene you just saw, but it's different. And you realize that there's something going on inside Grace's head where she can't remember it right.
And that's interesting, because I was thinking it was like Chance in that I was so bored by the first episode I almost didn't go back.
Burn. That's Chance Burn.
Because didn't you think that this was kind of boring, that first episode?
I was pretty captivated by the first one.
No, it did not win me over at all until the second episode, when it started getting more into sort of her backstory a little more.
No, I mean, Kyle was dead on about this, like right from the start. She's an unreliable narrator, and it's established both in her asylum past and her desire as a person that is behind bars to spin a story that might best serve her, as well as, like, I mean, you want to kind of root for her because the actress who plays her has that innocence look, and you're like, okay.
We see her as a victim just time and time again.
But we have her telling a story, and then we have her narrating over top of that another story where she's, like, talking about, like in a removed sense. It turns out later it's a letter that's being composed to the guy after the fact.
Oh, okay.
But it sounds like it's her, like, observing him and dictating, like, some other letter, like, hey, I'm telling you these certain things. I'm trying to figure out how best to phrase my lies to you. Or not lies, but how best to tell the story in the way that you want to hear it. And it's, like, the more he goes on, the relationship between them is kind of fascinating. I think he's really boring, the doctor.
You're right.
But I loved her relationship with her best friend, who ends up dying, and that second episode I thought was pretty gripping there.
Yeah, that second episode was what got me.
And just, like, the whole build-up, and then in that fifth episode, or was it the sixth, where they do the actual seance thing.
That's the sixth episode.
The sixth episode?
Yeah.
It goes, like, really intense, and I'm like,
insane.
It's a little bit Primal Fear, isn't it? Didn't it remind you of
Primal Fear? Ooh, I never saw Primal Fear.
Oh. It reminded me of that in, like, Edward Norton's kind of turn at the end. Where once she's under hypnosis, she's like...
Yeah.
Can we...
crazy.
For the listeners, can we just jump into spoiler territory real quick?
So we already said we're going
to chat this out with Randy.
Yep.
Okay, so when you get to episode six, you've kind of... You're going this whole way, and you're like, okay, she can't remember it, so we know that she doesn't have the whole story.
Right.
And now we know the story from other people's point of view. So, like, the guy she's with is all like, well, she said she wanted to have sex with me, and she told me to kill these guys and all this, da-da-da. Zachary Levi's character in the sixth episode, he comes back. Did you get to where he says he's going to be a hypnotist?
Yes, I did. I did see that.
So no, he wouldn't have seen that. Hypnotist.
I think that was like episode three or four, where he's like, "I'm going to go off to be a hypnotist."
I thought that was episode three, maybe not.
I thought it was the fourth one.
Well, anyways, he sneaks back into her life under the guise of "I'm a doctor. I'm a hypnotist."
Okay,
doctor.
Okay.
He puts her under, and she just goes like straight out. Possession.
She channels Mary Whitman.
Her
old friend, and like changes her voice and starts talking filthy to everyone. It's kind of a pretty gripping scene.
All right.
Yeah, like in the personality of that. Well, there's this interesting idea, and the main character we keep saying is boring. The reason he's so boring is because he's just reacting to everything that's going on. But something that he talks about is, are we our memories? Like, is the person we are because of the experiences that we've had? So if you can be somebody who doesn't experience, you know, the things that happen to you, are you a different person? Which is, I feel like, is really interesting, because then you get to the end where in my head I'm like, oh, we're going to have an M. Night Shyamalan twist, and we're going to find out this guy's actually in the mental institution and she was his nurse. And they don't do that, but...
This is based on a real story, by the way.
What, for real?
Yeah, this woman is a real woman who was convicted of murdering two people, and she eventually got exonerated, but the other guy that was her accomplice got hanged.
Dang.
The whole thing's based on a real story.
Huh. Yeah, but anyway, so the guy, he ends up getting injured in the war and has no memories the rest of his life. Is just a vegetable.
Huh.
Yeah.
You know, there's this other interesting part right at the very end when she gets released from prison 30 years, some odd years after the fact, and she's with that dude.
Mm-hmm.
And he keeps asking her to recount her experiences.
Yeah.
And she talks about, you know, she talks about in this letter she's writing so that she can express her own thoughts, I guess, to the audience. She talks about how men just need to have, like, hear what they want to hear. And she'll just say that for them because they're just so needy. And I was like, I don't know, something about that. Like, I keep replaying that part in my mind that, like, she was saying what Dr. Jordan needed to hear in order for him to feel better about the situation, or for him to feel entranced and, like, enchanted by her. And obviously that played out with his whole relationship with that landlady. But you also see that, like, the other guy, Jamie, that he needed her as well to just keep saying that so that he could keep apologizing and feeling better. And she would keep saying it's okay and accepting his apology. Like, what does it matter? It's just words to her. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, this all keeps showing this, like, the terrible role that women had to play then, still in some parts have to play today. Mm-hmm. And the two choices of either you're the pure fair maiden or you're essentially the whore. Mm-hmm. You that's your choose a path for how anyone's going to depict you in life. And it's just a terrible lose-lose proposition.
Well, yeah, and even in the end, like, the guy she goes off with is the dude who kind of sent her up shit creek in the first place. But it's like, what choices does she have, you know?
What choice did he have? He was a 14-year-old or whatever at the time, too. So
there's that, too.
The whole thing, I thought it was really well done in its build-up and complexity, how it paced out the story into six episodes. And season two is going to be crazy.
Are they doing a season?
No.
Stop that. Stop that.
Just a minute.
Randy, skip to episode six.
Okay.
Because if for nothing else, you have to see how that thing with Dr. Jordan and his landlady turns out.
No, I'll check
craziest
it out.
Craziest sex scene of the year, if you ask me.
I'll check it out. All right.
5 seconds of pure joy.
that sex scene was, it was just weird. Yeah.
Oh, it was...
I'm intrigued and fascinated by this because you set it up at a high bar there.
Okay, well, let's move on then, guys.
Wait, we don't get any more TV to talk about, right?
No, nobody. That was it. Other notable shows.
We got the main course.
Oh, the main course.
Stranger Things 2.
Yeah.
I guess they now call it the second season of Stranger Things. They call it Stranger Things 2, which, like, it's a movie sequel.
I loved. I thought that was a really – because here's the thing. This is such an 80s – I mean, there's so much 80s reference, but this really did feel like Aliens to their Alien.
Yeah.
This was like, you know, in the same way like the – and we're going to spoil the shit out of things, by the way, so people – will be spoilers for Stranger Things 2.
Yeah, you should not be listening to this if you haven't watched.
because – instead of just one Demogorgon loosed on our world, there was a little army of them.
Demodogs.
Bunch of Demodogs.
Demodogs.
And then the Mind Flayer.
And the Mind Flayer.
Are you familiar with the Mind Flayer?
I am, and it's just like Demogorgon is a bit of a stretch, the Mind Flayer is a bit of a stretch.
Okay.
Like that is a weird – I don't know how much the Duffel Brothers have actually played of D&D.
Well, they did say in the Beyond Stranger Things that they had already started developing the character before they were like, oh, wait, the Mind Flayer. It's kind of like that.
Yeah, it's not remotely like that, I get where they're going with it.
I think they're going for, like, these kids would try and find something that they could give a name to it based on what was available of D&D characters then.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I guess they want to call it that. It is something that has invaded Will's mind, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So this show, this season, it brought in some new characters, Sean Astin and Paul Reiser.
And Mad Max.
And Mad Max and Billy.
And the Red Ranger.
The Red Ranger. I didn't know he was the Red Ranger.
He's the Red Ranger in the new Power Rangers.
Who's the Red Ranger?
Billy.
Billy the Bully.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the thing is, that intensity,
that dude is studly.
That's what made him good in that Power Rangers movie.
We were set up by the previous season to think that Billy was going to have a turn, right? After the turn that Steve had, I was expecting a turn where Billy had something to offer. And instead, he is an obstacle and a complete asshole.
But you see a little bit of his backstory.
He got defeated. And he got defeated in a way where, like, at the end, when you see him share those glances with Max, you know, you kind of get the sense, like, he's not going to fuck with her again.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, next season, we may see that turn.
But I thought he was – he reminded me a bit of, weirdly, Robert Downey Jr. when he was at his peak. Like, he had that
weird science.
Yeah, the weird science. The jerky Robert Downey Jr. I thought that was great. I loved his whole 80s look.
Oh,
his
80s
Lost Boy look, man.
Thing
that was fantastic.
When he's doing the working out and smoking at the same time.
Yes. Oh, man. That's so good. I loved Max. I thought the story with her and Lucas was really good.
The love triangle between them and Dustin. Yeah.
It's funny. It wasn't even that much of a love triangle. Like it was Lucas and Max pretty early, like from the outset. Like Dustin had an interest, but he never had a chance.
No, but I like how they kind of show Dustin's struggle. He also was interested. He didn't know how to woo the ladies. And then he got in with, what's his name? Steve.
Yeah.
And Steve's sort of manly advice. I love Steve taking him under his wing.
Yes, the Dustin and Steve was great.
Like, the whole evolution of the Steve character, that is such brilliant, like, we did not like him in the very beginning.
Yeah.
We're like, that guy's a schmuck.
Yeah.
And then we turned to kind of like, whoa, he's kind of cool at the end of last season.
Yeah.
And now I'm just full on rooting for Steve.
Yeah. Steve. He's like one of my favorite characters.
Becomes a den mother.
We had the question of what we want for season three. Here's one thing I want for season three. I want Dustin to have his own baseball bat, like his own miniature version of the baseball bat, and for him and Steve to go into action together. That's what I want.
That's ridiculous.
Actually, I have two very serious season threes.
Yeah.
I think Nancy should get pregnant. Team pregnancy.
Interesting. Okay.
And play it totally serious.
And we don't know if it's Jonathan or Steve.
Oh, no. I definitely make it Jonathan. You got to put him through the shit. You got to make him just like his mom, where he's got to like have a kid to take care of and totally change his life up.
Yeah.
And that be their like real world drama. But then also, if they don't do it next season, they're going to have to do it. But they need more kids. Like, our kids have to become teenagers.
Well, they're only doing three seasons.
Bullshit.
No, third season is final season. Then
say
that.
I heard that they have enough for three seasons, but
I thought they were doing a trilogy.
They could go.
They have an end date. They said, or they have an ending in mind. But I thought they have more than just three seasons.
Oh, I thought they were doing a trilogy here.
Well, in the Beyond Stranger Things, I'm pretty sure they said at least three seasons.
Oh, okay.
We're at least at the third season.
Okay, yeah. Then you're right. They need more kids. Yeah.
I think it's four or five.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, I think if it was just one more season, they'd be fine. But yeah, I even made the comment off mic. You can already hear some of the voices start to crack. Like,
yeah,
that they don't puberty's need more. About to... I mean, they have the little sister. Lucas's little sister.
Oh, she's great.
She's adorable.
She's great.
But I don't think they need more kids.
You think they just follow them as they become teenagers and adults?
You remember Attack the Block, right?
Yeah.
You guys like that movie?
Yeah.
Okay, they brought in like the young kids.
Yeah.
So like it kind of you revolve around these like junior high school. Actually, no, they're like junior high kids.
Yeah.
But then you've got like the, you know, like the 10-year-olds. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think it could work with two sets of kids.
Did you guys think it worked to have? And I think it did, but they kept 11 off screen from like the kids were never with 11 until the basically the final episode.
Yeah, they had a sideliner because the problem is that 11 is a god
OP.
Among everyone else. And they've already built up her powers and then they intensified them this season.
Yeah.
I thought it was a smart call to have her like paired off with Hopper.
Yeah.
And just be able to do a bunch of character development with her.
Yeah.
And then have that little arc where she gets some, I wouldn't say closure, but she gets to like confront her mother and kind of start dealing with that. And then only because I imagine we'll see her mother again in the next season. But I really liked, what's her name? Collie?
Eight. Yeah.
So her running with her.
That's a question because I've seen some people were not on board with
this
that.
This is definitely
six?
A point of contention.
The Lost Sister?
That episode where all of a sudden basically we get this cliffhanger of the demo dogs crawling up the side. And then we spent an entire episode on Eleven's adventures in New York.
Oh, I loved it.
I did too.
It's all New York City 80s punk.
Yes.
And like the costumes and like
I was into
RoboCop
it.
And shit. And
I was totally into it. But I heard some complaints and I understand it because if this wasn't a Netflix show, if this was, say, Star Trek Discovery and they had a big cliffhanger, like you know, there's a big cliffhanger what's going to happen. And then the next week – there was no reference at all that cliffhanger. It was just another episode about something else.
That's called The Walking Dead.
You'd have been so pissed.
But the timing, it all makes sense.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be pissed because a lot of TV shows do that now.
I don't know, man.
Walking Dead does it a lot, like once a season.
Walking Dead does.
And it's usually annoying as fuck when they do it. But like with Netflix, you can do that because if you're really annoyed, just go on to the next episode. And that's what I did.
You watched the whole thing.
I did. I watched the whole thing in one shot. Yeah.
And you liked that episode, right?
I liked that episode. I see where people are complaining, but it's a weird complaint to make about a Netflix show.
Do you think it could have been done better if they had taken those characters, that punk gang, and brought them to Hawkins?
No. I liked that it was outside. I liked the break. I thought it worked really well. I understand where some people didn't, but I was 100% on board.
Well, like we got that question earlier that was asking, like, what do we think is going to happen in season three? This is one of those areas where I could see a lot of room for them to move into season three because now we don't have just 11. We have 8.
Yeah.
Which leads us to believe, are there others?
Yeah, right.
And if there are potentially others there, then we have a potential war of superpowered mutants.
Yeah.
Arithmetic war.
And
they're all numbers.
They could all potentially join forces or come face to face and fight all in the little town there.
Right, yeah.
Well, and what's even more interesting,
Hawkins,
even before you get to, like, will they be friends, will they be enemies, the variation in powers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 8's power is so much different than 11's power.
Yeah.
Like, what are all these other abilities?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, they might not go that direction, but they have that potential. They have the potential for where they ended last episode, the final episode, where it does the flip and that evil is still there.
Yeah.
Will had a definite connection, and who knows how much they got rid of that and how much is still going to be a part of him or may have infected others within the town.
I liked that the final – one of the final scenes in season one was Will vomiting out that little thing. And then that becomes the demo dog.
Does it?
Yeah, that's. I mean, it was in Will's trash, wasn't it?
It was no, it was in Dustin's trash.
Yeah, and they actually they mentioned this on the Beyond but Stranger.
That's
Things.
Had to be where it came from, right?
Well, so I think what they said there was that the demo dogs came from those, but
oh,
there
so
was
maybe that wasn't
a lot
the
of them. Probably.
Yeah. Okay.
I think one of the suggestions was that what Will threw up became the root system, the living root system underground, and the living
everything
root system birthed the demo dogs.
Yeah.
And that was bridging the gap between the two worlds. Like, that's what it was able to build because they weren't able to burn everything out. Some other whole structure built grew underneath.
Actually, that makes more sense. Yeah.
So let's talk Sean Astin and let's talk Paul Reiser.
Okay. First, Bob.
Bob. Okay. Love Bob. Bob was their redemption of Barb. Like, they had this everyman character who they didn't just kill off. They built him up, and then they killed him off.
And he was a lovable character.
Yeah, like, I loved Bob. And when they killed him, I was watching that, and I was waiting for it, because it looked like when all the demo dogs were running, I was like, oh, they're all fucked. I don't know what's going to happen here, but they're fucked. And then you had the scene where Bob's like being talked through by Paul Reiser. And I'm like, okay, so Paul Reiser's going to get eaten. He's going to be talking and the thing's going to come and kill him. And it didn't. And then he hides in the closet. Everything seems like it's okay. I'm like, oh, they faked me out. He's going to make it. And then he goes out there and you're like, right before they kill him, you're like, oh shit, they're going
to
kill him.
Why'd they have him stop? Why would that have ever been a thing to do?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it was so well done though, because I was like, I completely bought Winona Ryder's reaction. I thought it was really, really good.
Bob is an interesting character in that I thought he might be a villain for like the first half of the season.
Mm-hmm. I could see that.
There were all these different scenes where I was like, why is that guy with her? Is he there just to keep tabs on her? Is he like a like infiltrator from that evil science corporation?
Oh, yeah.
And I kept thinking like he's pretending he's just this tech guy from there. But then it's like, oh, wait, they have some like shared childhood history. But I'm like, he still could have some nefarious intent. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, I feel like he could be a villain and not realize it, where he's giving Will bad advice, advice that's going to get him killed.
When he talks about the clown and he said, stop to him. And, and that whole scene felt like super twisted and weird and intense.
Yeah.
Like, when we watched the Beyond episodes with Jim Rash narrating, and Jim Rash is talking about how he felt uncomfortable during that scene and thought he might be bad. I was like, me too. I felt that exact same thing. I thought Sean Astin was giving bad advice intentionally and like trying to mislead Lil Will.
And also
Paul Reiser.
Paul Reiser, same thing. Paul Reiser, I mean, they're playing off, I think, his Aliens character to some extent, where he was this sort of sleazy.
They also mentioned that.
And you're sort of like, we're programmed to think this guy's acting like a nice guy, but he's ahead of this evil, you know, corporation. Clearly, he's the bad guy. And so the turn they took with him, I really liked. I didn't see it
that
coming.
He genuinely did kind of care. And he's torn between two things.
Well, everybody else in that room, everybody else in that room is like, well, so we'll just kill the boy. We just flamethrow the thing. And if he dies, he dies. And he's like, no, we're not doing that. What's wrong with you people?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, okay. So this guy is actually all right. Yeah, I liked that. I did not expect him to survive.
Yeah, right.
And then to have him and Hopper have this sort of weird friendship, it's a different relationship than where they left Hopper and whatever the labs is. I'm forgetting the name of the labs.
Hawkins Labs.
Is it Hawkins Labs?
Yeah.
You know, at the end of season one, it's this very sinister, like, Hopper had to make a deal and is working with them, you know, to keep this all swept under the rug. And they were the big bads. And now it's like they're sort of cooperative and maybe working for probably positive goals to keep this evil of the upside down away from our world.
Yeah.
Well, and I feel like that scene was very important because they needed to give you something definitive that tells you next season, Eleven's going to start off like probably in school with the kids, yeah. like a normal life.
Yeah.
Like they've got past all of that.
I am way too invested in the relationship between Eleven and Mike.
I know, right?
Why is it like such a cute couple that
it's
I'm
so
like,
sweet.
Just, like, I'm like, I really like, they sidelined Mike.
Yeah.
Made, like he said,
yeah.
made him emo Mike this whole season.
Yeah.
Where he's just kind of mopey. But the payoff at the end
yeah.
for him just being a little bit detached from the rest of the group and pining over this girl who, for all he knows, might potentially be dead.
Yeah.
Not fully sure. That snowball at the end, I love that whole dance scene.
Oh, yeah, the dance at the end was great.
I love that they wrap up the scary stuff like halfway through, and then they just really just take some time to like
yeah.
ease everyone back into like normal life and then really play up that ball. And
yeah.
like all well, the kids getting dances.
Yeah, Lucas gets his first kiss with Max and vice versa. And Mike and Eleven. Dustin gets his cool ducky at the end of 16 Pretty in Pink moment.
Mm-hmm.
Who am I forgetting?
Oh, Will.
And then Will's still screwed because Will is Will.
Will got some girl came over and like asked him to dance.
Yeah, but he's still sort of a conduit at the end, upside down somehow, probably.
You know what that snowball was missing, though?
What's that?
Nobody got a hand job in an igloo.
He's like, you're bringing Atypical again.
Bring him back Atypical. Second call out this episode.
Oh, boy. I did not watch this show. So.
Oh, you didn't watch Atypical?
No.
I'm doing a rewatch of Shannon
right now.
Like
the first episode.
So that just sounded like complete nonsense to Grant and also a little inappropriate.
At first, it sounded really weird. I was like, what?
Did you not know? Yeah, Kyle wants a handjob in Igloo in every episode of every show.
Oh.
That's literally the season finale. Like, the last scene is the kid getting a handjob in Igloo. At the snow dance.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
All cool things. All cool things.
But yeah, this was. Did you guys think this was better than season one?
No. Well, I mean, season one had magic. It was
yeah.
it was capturing all that John Carpenter and Stephen King
yeah.
and Spielberg, like all of that in this moment. And it was like, how are they managing to get all this, nail it, and do it correctly? And all those kids were fresh and
yeah.
like I think it's a little bit easy for them to kind of fall into the same patterns and do similar things to the last season, like, oh, this worked and let's do it again. Like, I really enjoy it
yeah
that Winona Ryder's character is once again shut in the house and doing a puzzle,
yeah,
but it also is like, that's what you did last season, and you're just kind of following what works, I guess.
That's interesting because I felt the other way. I felt like the first season was such a melange of Stephen King and Dean Koontz and all this kind of – and Spielberg and all that kind of thing. Whereas this one, I felt like they were building their own mythology with Hawkins Labs and the Demodogs and all that kind of thing. So it felt fresher to me.
Yeah, like we already knew where the story – had begun, and now we're able to mix these characters up, get some of those unlikely team ups like Dustin and Steve.
Yeah.
And what I think was fantastic about the first season and what they doubled down on in the second season, and why I think the second season is a little more successful, is they balance the supernatural threat with the realistic threat, or the like the Billy, you know, the thing
yeah.
that's, you know,
yeah.
coming down the street, which for me watching that, those Stephen King style threats, those like the bully or like the real one, those tend to be the scarier moments for me on the show.
Yeah, because
well,
they're more
real. They had the real life bully for the kids that mm-hmm. like Eleven wrecks their shit.
Yeah.
In the first season. And we don't have that. We just have, you know, some of the other awkward elements of budding puberty, I guess.
Right,
like,
yeah.
Well, I feel like Billy is a great villain in the same way that the bullies were good villains in the first season. But then also something about Billy, like until the end, and I guess I'm still there, I couldn't tell if he was just like straight up racist.
Right. Yeah, I couldn't either.
Like
with Lucas, yeah, I wasn't sure
that
either.
That kind of scared me a little bit more.
I think he is.
Yeah, that it was a yeah. racism thing. And also, Billy was so fucked up that I was like, is he going to kill someone? Like, I was legit scared for the kids with Billy.
Well, it seemed like he was about to beat Steve to brain damage.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
No, and that's something that the creator said is, you know, you don't think that he's actually going to kill somebody, but he could accidentally do something that he doesn't realize that would have, you know, permanent damage.
Yeah, there was a danger to him that you saw in 80s bullies especially. They were always physically violent in a way that was very disturbing, and I thought they did a good job bringing that across.
Yeah. Real quick, something I'm kind of curious about that I want to ask you about
is
– so they kind of are stuck right now where Eleven, she's overpowered. All right.
Yeah.
When you team her up with everybody else, I mean, there's no situation that they can't kind of face now. How do you go into season three without taking her abilities away or removing her from the group and still make it interesting?
It's the same way you handle Superman or Dark Phoenix or one of these overpowered. The threats aren't physical. You make the threat. So the obvious thing is to go the Dark Phoenix route and have Eleven's power become a thing that she's not really mature enough to handle.
Mm-hmm.
And she becomes the danger, and she can't use her power for fear of hurting her friends or hurting Hopper and that kind of thing.
What will likely have to happen is that she does something that hurts Mike.
Yeah.
And then she's afraid to use it.
Yeah, something like that. You make it a psychological crutch and not a physical crutch.
There you go.
And that's an old trick of superpowers, and it makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and they were even saying in some of the bonus stuff that at one point Will was going to kill Bob. Like early on.
Oh, my God.
And like think of like how different the tone would have been had they done that.
And that, yeah, because that then gives his mom just such a messed up thing to deal with, that her kid, possessed or not, killed the man she loved.
I love what they did. It just feels like they did right by Bob.
I agree. Yeah. Bob got his big heroic moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know what to say. I binged through that and I love that show.
Yeah.
That's why I really was eager to watch all the behind the scenes things, even if it was a little silly and the kids were hyperactive at points and like so it's hard to have a serious conversation.
I love watching stuff like that because it reminds you, oh wait, they're all actors on this show. And in real life they just love talking about themselves.
Those are just little kids and they're just super eager to be like, oh, I told you to write that in the script, and the Duffer Brothers are like, sure. I don't know, the whole thing is really cute and I'm so eager for a third season, and yeah, there's so many different ways I could go with it.
Yeah,
it's gonna be a lot of fun.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, guys, let's go ahead and wrap things up there. This has been a fun episode, and I'm sure we got homework to do for next week that Randy's already assigned us.
I don't have any homework next week.
Uh-oh. Until next week, guys.
TV Dudes out.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Permanent Record Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, please go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter @TV Dudes and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and permanentrcrd.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.